Welcome to the Enneagram 2.0 podcast. I'm Beatrice Chestnut.
And I'm Urano Paz.
And today we're talking about subtypes and relationships, this time focusing on the three head types. And this completes a series that we began before the holiday break, where we did one episode on the body-based types and how they are in relationship, and another episode on the heart-based types. And today we talk about the head types.
Yeah, glad we got to the head types. As a head type myself, and I do know that people who are not head types find it mysterious, sometimes hard to relate with head types. And head types have their own struggles. They're very particular struggles in relationships and also blessings, as all of us. So hopefully we can have a good talk today, Bea.
Yes, and why don't we get right to it and start talking about type 5?
Okay, would you like to start? Or should
I start? Why don't you start since you're a 5? Yeah.
Okay, so as to the type 5 person patterns in relationships, maybe I can start with some good things so that 5s are not too pissed off at me if I start talking about the more challenging ones. As a 5 myself, I tend to be a bit more critical with 5s, and I sometimes need to watch out for this. So I believe that 5s bring some blessings to relationships. That one of them is that there is a lot of commitment to the relationship when the relationship has been really established. I see, for instance, in friendships, and I know we're talking more about intimate relationships in this series, but I wanna try to explain this in the case of friendships. I think that 5s tend to be extra loyal and caring of those friendships. And I see a pattern that 5s have more longer term relationships than other types. And I also see that 5s usually don't give up on people very easily. It's even a bit hard for me to explain that because it sounds a bit paradoxical with some characteristics of the 5 personality, but I just observe that in practice and I see a clear pattern, and I've talked to some 5s about that and they agree, and I just observe that. I think that it's very hard for 5s to get to the point of connection and attachment, and then when they do, they're there. And there is something about head types, not only 5s, that is, if I say it, I said it, and I don't need to keep saying it. I said it once, and that's what will be valid for the relationship. And we head types consider then that if we said it once, it's still valid. And we sort of expect that the person does the same and get a bit shocked when that doesn't happen. And that is a problem when it comes to communicating emotions. Like if the 5 says, I love you once, it's like, I told you already, instead of just saying it over and over again, like other people need. And 5s are a little bit like prone to depth in relationships in terms of talks or interests or explorations. Can be explorations of the world or things they do together, the kind of activity, talks, so that kind of depth. But not always the depth in emotions is easy. It's a little bit more around exploration of world things, of understandings of life. But for the 5, creating what they consider to be bonding aspects when talking about all those things. It feels really like a precious thing that us 5s are sharing with someone else, when we are going to the depths of understandings and sharing opinions and findings and then when the five shares with you something that is going on with them or something they're feeling, even if it's once in a long time, that from the five's perspective has an extremely deep meaning when it comes to understanding how important that relationship is for the five. I don't really believe that other people know how hard that is for a five to do, and then when they do, it would be useful if people could read that as something big is happening for this five in the relationship with me, for the five to be able to open up. Even if the five opens up 10 times less than you do, whatever your type is. So that is something to be understood. Another thing that I believe is positive for five.
Yeah, and if I can just interject, I think you're saying some really important and useful information for all of us. I think we have been talking a lot about subtype. So maybe also you could add in if you think certain relationship patterns apply more to self-preservation, social, or sexual vibes also.
Yeah, what I've just said is superficially easier for a sexual five. Like a sexual five will share feelings and more, but in my opinion, it's under the sexual five's control. It's not that they are sharing what they don't want to share or what's really difficult for them to share. I think that some people mistake sexual fives as people who are really open and sharing more, and I don't see that. I think that what happens is that under their own control, they are willing to share the specific thing and up to a specific point that they have prepared themselves to do and not feel completely vulnerable when doing. And the subtypes are strategies that come from the passion. So there is avarice in there. But it's always risky when you ask me questions about fives, because as I said, I tend to be a bit more critical of fives than of other types. And I'm sorry for the fives listening. So while I think there are differences in subtypes, sometimes the differences in the things I said are more in the surface and not deep down. But I think the other things I said to me are valid for all fives, a little bit here and there. There might be a difference, like the sharing of opinions, knowledge might be a bit more for social. But I think these things are valid for all fives. But what would you add? I think you can add a lot, given your specialty in subtypes.
Yeah, I think that, I want to highlight some of the things that you said that I think are really important, especially for people who are in relationship with fives to understand, which is, fives will have probably a very different relational communication style than you will, no matter what your type, because they don't always say, they're not always explicit. They don't always come out with all of what's going on inside. And as Renanio said, if they do, it's important to value that as something really meaningful. And I think one of the things that can be problematic for those of us in relationship with fives is that fives don't always communicate what's going on inside. They aren't always explicit. And so it's hard for us to know sometimes, whether the five really values us or wants to be close to us or not. It can be hard when we try to read the signals, because we may not be decoding the behavior of the five in the way that the five intends it. We may decode that behavior more in terms of our own experience and our own assumptions, which of course, you know, how can we do otherwise? It's very challenging to always, you know, really put yourself in someone else's shoes. I would say about the self-preservation five, I noticed that self-preservation fives lead a little bit more with humor, a little bit as a way of deflecting attention from being on them in an intensive way. So they can tend to be friendly and humorous and light, I would say, a little bit more light than the other two fives. On the one hand, because that's sort of part of the self-preservation five style, but I also think it's, you know, it's part of being warm, a little bit like some of the other self-preservation types, like sixes, for instance, can be warm. But I also think it's a way of kind of creating a boundary without it being very obvious boundary. Like I'm going to make a joke to deflect attention or to put the attention out on something other than me. I may not be, you know, coming forward with something you asked me about because I make a joke. I see that sometimes with self-preservation fives. I also think self-preservation fives, again, focus a lot on boundaries. And they are very, I think like Ranio said, when a five really decides to let you in or decides that they want to be connected to you, it's very meaningful and they're very steadfast and loyal. However, for a self-preservation five, I think there's a lot of people that don't make the cut. I think there's more people that that self-preservation five sort of inside themselves decides, I don't necessarily want to be that close to this person. And so if a self-preservation five does let you in, you're probably part of a very small group of people that are really, really let in and trusted by that person. But again, I think sometimes it's important if you're in relationship with a self-preservation five to, at the right moment, you know, ask questions or make it clear if you need more communication from them. For instance, I remember a good friend of mine who's a self-preservation five. At one point, she kind of made a point of telling me that she really valued me and that I was one of a few people in her life that she really trusted and really appreciated. And that kind of surprised me at the time. And I wouldn't have known that necessarily just from observing her behavior. So I think when a self-pres five tells you something or lets you in or invites you in, that's important. And I think it's good if you're in relationship with a self-preservation five to be sensitive to their boundaries and to not surprise them or not intrude on them, and communicate if the boundaries aren't always clear.
One thing I notice in myself and other fives is that most of the time I feel more connected in the relationship than the person thinks I am. And it really feels like I am more connected than the other person is. It's very paradoxical because fives disconnect, but it's almost like in the inside, the meaning of the person when the relationship is positive is very, very high, very important. And people don't know it because fives undercommunicate, fives are mysterious. And I just noticed that it's common in many relationships for me that I feel more connected to the person than the person thinks I am. And sometimes, as I said, more than the other person is connected to us. And that's always a paradox, because the more visible and normal thing is that fives disconnect, right? And what is that? Well, one dimension of that is that fives do need time, privacy, and they need to disconnect from whoever the person is, no matter how good the relationship is. They need breaks. And the relationship gets better when the breaks are given, without questioning, without, you know, pushbacks. But at the same time, when it's not the moment that fives need breaks, or when it's not the case of disconnecting for a problem that's happening, then fives tend to be more there than people assume they are. But of course, when there is an issue, there is a disconnect. It's very automatic. It feels very difficult to stop. Very fast mechanism of isolating ourselves from the other person, cutting emotional ties as a protection. And it's hard to manage that because it feels very important. And that gives away a reality that even fives are not very aware of, that deep inside fives are very sensitive. Maybe not only emotionally, or not mostly emotionally. Maybe it's more like being sensitive as they are sensitive to light, to sound, like some disturbance in the field when a problem happens. And that is very, very sensitive. I don't know if you want to say anything, because I'm going to say some challenges now.
I just want to turn our attention back to the subtypes, because I think we continue, and maybe it's because, as Naranjo said, the three subtypes of five are more alike each other. They look more alike from the outside. They can be harder to distinguish. So maybe it makes sense that we're talking a little more generally, but I think it would be also good, especially to hear from you as a social five. I do want to say one thing about what you said before you continue. And that is, you talked about connection and how the five can feel more connected than the other person thinks. And I do think that makes me think maybe we might need to talk about what we define as connection, because I think different types can define connection and their experience of it differently. You know, I think there's sort of the idea of being connected. There might be sort of a mental level of connection, an emotional level of connection, and a body level of connection. So there may be like thinking about how close you are to the person, or a concept of the closeness that's there, versus the emotional connection, versus maybe the body-based might be proximity, or how much you reach out to that person and talk to them directly, or do things with them, or, you know, or sort of having a shared experience, either live or at least in the moment. I think we may need to just sort of recognize that just what connection is can be multi-layered, and there can be different definitions of it.
Right. What I want to say now is something a bit harder for fives to hear. I notice a pattern for other people in relationship with fives that they end up feeling alone, that they end up feeling a little bit like abandoned, and even without stimulus. It's feeling emptied in the relationship. And that is something really sad, that makes sense because of the five's passion or emotional vice called avarice, which has to do with connecting the emotional ties. And as soon as a five gets into a relationship that implies living with the person or spending too much time with the person, the five mind starts planning for how am I going to protect my time, my agenda, and then there is a whole conflict inside the five to be able to live with someone and to share too many moments with that person. So the result usually is setting boundaries that sometimes are not very, very easy to see. That can just be boundaries as in the five will determine what we are going to do and for how long. So there are multiple ways that this can manifest, but it can become bossy But above all, it's like when it's time for the five to disconnect, it's hard for the five to negotiate. Because if that has been sort of planned in their heads, it starts feeling like something that is essential. And then if that happens too much and for too long, then I notice patterns that other people start feeling like I don't even think it's abandoned. I don't think it's lonely, only feeling like dry or emptied in the relationship. It's being and not being in a relationship. And that is very sad. The moment I see that this happening with me, the moment I see with other fives going through that, it's sad for the person, of course, but it's also very sad for the five, because it's not what the five wants.
I appreciate you saying that. I think that makes a lot of sense. Anything in particular you would say about social fives in relationship?
I think social fives tend to need more the exchange of discussions, knowledge. Fives can get more attracted by that side of the other person, social fives, the side of the other person that is smart, clever, and willing to discuss and engage in specific exchanges, and that fuels the whole relationship. And at the same time, social fives might be more out there in the world with other people who they share that with. And it's way better if it's people and not that person. And that might not be too favorable with the for the relationship, the intimate relationship. Unless the partner is also a social, then there is a match in that, and then they come back together and connect more easily. But I also think social fives tend to be a bit colder than the other two fives, and but at the same time, most social fives are not as shy or even not as introverted as the other fives. So that might be an advantage for relationships.
Yeah, the social five, I think, tends to be the most intellectual of an intellectual of, you know, a type that's already very intellectual. And so because of this, I think they can be even more in their heads and can find it hard to relate on the emotional level. And on the one hand, I think we need to have compassion for the social five, because I think it's an area where they can feel easily overwhelmed or like it's not their comfort zone. And they feel so comfortable in the head. You know, it's a place where they feel a lot of power and a lot, you know, often social fives are experts, they know a lot. And so, you know, who can blame them for wanting to stay in their comfort zone? And yet in relationship, and again, the closer you are to the five, the harder it can be, the social five, because there may not be an ability for the social five to kind of put themselves in the other person's shoes, especially when it comes to emotionally and in terms of how they're relating on the level of feeling or that kind of thing. And so I think it can be important for people in relationship with social fives just to understand that there can be a challenge around empathy, that there can be a low tolerance for talking about emotions or being in an emotional space. The more I think you understand that about the social five, the more that you can sort of talk about what's happening in a straightforward way.
Yeah, again, I think that some of the things you're saying, while they are true, they apply to all fives. I think for all fives, it's very hard to to talk emotions and relationship problems as often as the other person might want or need. It's something that even a sexual five will try to avoid that if it's a content coming from the other person. It's way easier if it's something coming from yourself as a five. And I think that all fives tend to need more limits to that. It's very hard to function in the relationship if there are expectations. Expectations are hard for fives in general. But then when it's something about emotional processing, when it comes to constant, it's extremely hard and not pleasant. So I think to me, it's more a five thing than a social five thing. Although mm-hmm. for social fives, it might be a bit more.
Right. And so I think for the person in relationship with a five, especially a social five, but to some extent, all fives, it's about understanding the challenging way that fives experience emotional connection. And I think for the five, and especially a social five, it can be about allowing for room to grow, to become more emotional or more tolerant of being in emotions. Because I think for all the types, we all have these edges that feel kind of impossible or hard to tolerate. But the whole point of the Enneagram is that we grow, we lean into what's hard so that we raise our tolerance level more than we maybe thought we could. So I think it's important for fives to even mentally leave some room for possibility of becoming better at being emotional and becoming having it become easier over time, especially if they believe that it can and if they make efforts in that direction. So what's different about the sexual five that you would highlight?
I think sexual fives tend to engage more in relationship discussions, but again, it's a little bit more what they want to talk and when they want to talk than being totally available for that all the time, depending on what the other person brings. But they are better in that to a certain point. And there is a bigger need for romance, for an indirect expression of self, not only emotions, like an individuality. I want to express myself. But then the most important thing to know, there is the push-pull. It's very, very big for sexual fives. Like, I want you, but I don't, because I'm always idealizing things and I'm hoping that the other person will get me in all possible ways. Like, basically raising the bar of what you expect as a five to a point that is not human. Like, the person might not exist. And then disappointment happens with a certain frequency.
Yeah, I see sexual fives. I mean, I think all fives, this is really important to know, have a really low tolerance for small talk and superficial interaction. But I think that might be even more heightened for the sexual five. Like, they're looking for a lot of depth with someone, and maybe only one person or very few people. They really want to go deeper, I think, in different ways, even emotional, more than the other two fives. They have more of a kind of a craving for depth and intimacy, but not with everyone. And it's hard to find the circumstances in which that feels really right for a sexual five. But all fives have this sort of sense of like, ooh, I'd rather not waste my energy interacting if it's just going to be on the superficial level. And I think sexual fives really feel that even stronger. It's like they're really looking for a juicy connection, something where they can really share more and talk at a deep level. But again, it can be hard to find the right person and with which that feels comfortable.
Yeah, I think to what you're saying, it feels non-attractive, but also disrespectful when the person is not really raising the bar of the exchange. So on one hand, fives disconnect, but on the other hand, they wish for that very special connection.
Anything else to say about fives before we move on to sixes?
No, we can go to sixes.
Okay, so what would you say about sixes in relationship? Maybe starting with self-preservation six.
I'll talk about sixes in general, and then either you or I or us can differentiate according to subtypes, because it is indeed very important to differentiate subtypes for sixes. But there are some general things that are valid for all three subtypes. One is very hard to trust, very hard to trust, very, very hard to trust, and then I trust completely. It's a pattern that I see with all sixes. It's like I've put you into so many trials that there is a moment that I just relax in trusting you. I might not trust you in specific things that you do or don't do or go, but not in the basic thing of trust in the relationship. So I think that that is a pattern for all sixes. Another thing is very sensitive to betrayal, although not the most sensitive type for that, but especially when they are got into in surprise, right? They are very, very sensitive. And another thing is sixes expect or need, what they need from a partner is a mix of support and reassurance on one hand, and some challenge and pushes on the other hand. Like, the partner needs to be the one pushing the six forward. Like, now you go, you can do it, go. And at the same time, come here, I have your back. So it's an art, in my view, to relate with the six in providing the two things. And you need to alternate the two things. If you do only one of them, it doesn't work. There needs to be this alternating dynamics of pushing the six and protecting the six. It can't be only one of them. And I'll say more, but why don't you add things?
Well, focusing on the self-preservation six, I would say, you know, this is a six that on the outside can look like a heart type, can look like a two even. So it's a six that tends to be the most relational, the one who's sort of oriented toward pleasing other people, or, you know, it's the name of the subtype is warmth. All right. So this is someone who is warm and friendly, and it needs to be understood that that's in part real, because sixes they tend not to be fake and inauthentic, really, but it can also be a little bit fake because it's being done in service of fear, in service of, if I'm nice to you, then you'll protect me and you won't attack me. You won't express anger toward me, because there's a big fear of other people's anger. So there can be some patterns that self-preservation sixes get into, where they're a little bit more oriented toward pleasing the other, or ingratiating themselves with the other through a kind of relating that, where they don't bring their full self to the relationship. They don't bring their angry part. They don't bring their maybe more powerful part, the part that is more confident. And maybe they haven't, they sometimes don't develop that in themselves until they do some inner work. So it can be good when you're in relationship with a self-preservation six to encourage them, like Urania was saying, to bring more of themselves, to encourage them in ways that helps them develop more confidence, because it's also the most questioning and doubtful six. And they question themselves and they question others. They can be actually, I hear self-preservation sixes sometimes say that they are pretty trusting. Although of course it's always kind of both as Urania said, they really get to the point where you're really in, where you're completely trusted. There can be sort of a back and forth until the moment where they really feel like they really can trust in you.
Another thing is sixes in relationships appreciate when the other person decides to share a little bit of the concerns about everything that impacts the relationship. Otherwise, it's very easy to leave all the concerns to the six because they're so good in problem solving and spotting problems. And sometimes sixes find it hard to delegate problem solving to other people because they will keep anxious that the person won't do what's needed, right? But when the other person offers help in that and shares some of the anxiety, then the six can sort of relax. And helping the six relax in the relationship is a must. And that humor helps a lot. Also, you know, just reminding the six of good things that are happening because sixes have this amnesia for what's good. On the other hand, I believe that sixes need to see how they don't play the role. I mean, they don't undertake all the authority they should have in the relationship, like making themselves accountable for a little bit more of what is happening in the relationship. And also sometimes sixes procrastinate solving issues in relationships, and above all, the problem of projection. If you are a six, you need to see how much and the ways that you project onto your partner many things that are actually about you. And sixes project all the time, and relationship is the prime thing in life that makes us project. So it's unbelievable how much sixes can project in relationships. So learning about that defense mechanism, and we had a past episode about defense mechanisms, is really useful for sixes.
I think people who are in relationship with self-preservation sixes can sometimes get frustrated by a kind of indecisiveness that the self-preservation six can have. They can hesitate. They can have a hard time moving forward, deciding this or that. They can get caught up in analysis paralysis. And so if you're in relationship with a self-preservation six, it can be good to understand that and have compassion for them around that, but also encourage them and even collaborate with them on problem solving or making decisions or reinforcing what you see in them that's sort of powerful or able to make a decision or having a sense of intuitively knowing what the right thing is instead of needing to look outside or keep questioning. So talking about social six, social sixes, of course, in contrast to self-preservation sixes, tend to be more certain, you know, less doubting. They tend to be extremely responsible. And the certainty that they have comes from the fact that they cope with fear by looking for a good authority. And it can be a system, it can be a set of rules associated with whatever they've learned to trust in. And it can be a person or not a person, an ideology, a way of thinking, a system. So social sixes tend to be very systematic in their thinking. They tend to really be concerned with what the rules and the guidelines say. And their fear can sort of play out in their need to adhere to rules. They can also be super responsible and have a hard time letting go of that responsibility or trusting someone else to take on that responsibility because they, you know, really, they get really good at it. And of course, it's fueled by fear. And so there can be a sense of it's not okay to not be super responsible at all times.
Right. I want to say that in the initial stages of relationships, especially in the moment that people are considering committing to a long-term exclusive relationship, that sixes may have more trouble. They may question everything and procrastinate and be very fearful because, of course, the level of certainty that they seek is just not possible. It's impossible to map all the future. And that's something for sixes to make sure they look at because relationships are about having diving into the unknown, but with some certainty, then it's doable for sixes and for head types in general. I'd say that for all hard types, not hard types, for head types, it's very, very important to have more constancy and to have more assurance that what we are agreeing on here is something that will not be questioned, that we're here together because of the need for head types to have more predictability. I'd say that for fives, sixes, and sevens, this is perhaps the most important success factor in relationships. Everything goes better if that's offered to the head type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very important. And I think for, you know, a social six that's in relationship, I think it can be important to learn to share the responsibility, learn what's coming from fear, and be more and more conscious of what relational patterns are coming from fear in a way that's not good for relationship, and that would be good for you to be more aware of and shift and transform. And it's important for the person in relationship with the social six, I think, to understand that they may need support in recognizing when what they do comes from fear and sort of reassurance around their fear, not talking them out of it, but hearing them out, and then sort of working together to find ways forward that aren't only dictated by fear, because that's often, you know, not a good motivation for decisions and things that you do in relationship, but ways to take the fear into account and be able to talk about it openly, so that sometimes you may go the way that where it is more risky, but that's the right decision for you in relationship. And so being able to talk about the fear, not as a bad thing, but as just something that's part of the picture, and needs to be taken into account and understood, and included.
Right. Anything else about sixes, or should we move on to sevens?
I think we need to talk about sexual six. Sexual sixes are the counter type. So it's a type that it reacts, copes with fear more from a place of assertiveness or aggressiveness even. It's often a person who isn't very aware of their fear. You know, if they haven't done any inner work, They may not really feel vulnerability and fear very often. They may go straight to a kind of fight mode. You know, if the different ways of working with fear or fight or flight, the sexual six is the fight six. And so it's a six that can be more contrarian, that can argue a little bit more, that can push back on what's being said. They're kind of automatic. I mean, all sixes can be contrarians and kind of automatically take the other side, but sexual sixes will do that the most. And sometimes there can be an aggressiveness behind that, which again is coming from fear. But the hard part when you're in a relationship with a sexual six is they may not realize what all is coming from fear because they're not as aware of the role that fear plays in the way they relate. So I think, you know, for one thing, I remember I worked with a person who was a sexual six, and a lot of what we were working on was her relationship with her husband. And she would, when she felt fearful, she would express it, she would get angry. And there was a really hard dynamic where he was a person who had a hard time with anger. And so he would not react well. He wouldn't hear her. It would be hard for him to stay connected to her and relate to her in a clear way when she was angry. But that made her more angry because she would get more fearful. So I think a lot of times it's understanding that if there is assertiveness or aggressiveness or a contrarian view being expressed, that there may be fear underneath that, and see, you know, finding out whether the person can get in touch with that or not. But take that into account. And again, have compassion for the fact that there's a fearfulness inside and an avoidance of vulnerability potentially that plays a big role in how the sexual six relates. And sexual sixes tend to trust themselves more than others. Sexual self-preservation sixes can trust other people more than themselves, but sexual sixes are the opposite. And they can appear like very not trusting of the other person, very questioning and even pushing back a lot, especially if they feel vulnerable or fearful. And sometimes, again, they don't necessarily register that. So it can be important to just, again, understand that about the sexual six, is that there may be a contrarian impulse. There may be a way that the more threatened they feel, the more they can move toward threatening situations, the more they can get assertive or angry in a way that may feel hard to know how to meet. But again, the more you understand that, and again, remember, sexual sixes can look a bit like eights. And so it's a similar kind of dynamic where it can be hard to know how to engage with them if they're in a place where they're kind of armored and assertive. Anything you would add about sexual sixes?
No, I think we're good with sixes.
Okay, so let's talk about sevens.
So should I start, or do you want to start?
Sure, yeah, you can start.
Yeah, so sevens find it harder to commit. And it's important to see that underneath what sometimes is an appearance of committing. Because sevens have this need to keep multiple options and keep options open, and committing to one relationship is not the easiest thing. And sevens won't tell you exactly. But sometimes this lack of commitment comes in another format. It's like, we're together, it's you and me, but I need you to change all the time, and I need us to change all the time. We can't just be this. We need to be this, and that. And that is always a hard time committing to what is, right? So that is something that sevens need to look very closely at. And that is in the root of many problems of the relationships with sevens. I do not agree with more superficial analysis that say that sevens don't have that issue. It's very true that sevens can stay for a long time in relationships and not having any issue that will push them away from that. But that is not necessarily the commitment that I'm talking about. And also, it depends on culture. Like, if you see my home country, Brazil, that is very seven-ish and Latin, so you will see that it's even a bit harder for sevens to commit. So it depends on multiple factors, but commitment in this more broad sense is an issue. Another thing is sevens needing the relationship to be positive, be fun, be adventure seeking, and just positive. While it's not only that, right? There is the everyday life. There is what happens with the relationship after a few years. There is just challenges that exist in the relationship and in life itself. And sevens might associate hardship with the relationship itself. And that's important for you as a seven, if you're listening to us now, to observe, to try to differentiate. And to understand that the sought for freedom is a little bit ego-driven for sevens. It's a little bit also illusory. To an extent, the freedom that sevens want is the freedom of not having a commitment with something that is happening here and now, right? It's to keep options open. On the other hand, I think that sevens bring so many blessings to relationships. They bring lightness to relationships. And I do think that for sevens and for other types, including fives, lightness is essential. I remember in a marriage, the priest to me seemed to be a seven, and the advice he gave the couple in front of him, he was celebrating the marriage. The advice was, if you guys want to discuss the relationship, make sure you do it in the first Tuesday every other month. Like, don't do it all the time. And I laughed because first, I liked that advice. And second, I could see that he was coming from his personality type that I think was seven, because I sort of knew this priest from before. In the relationship dynamics, there is the tendency to escape certain situations and not to confront what's needed. Sevens in general, not always, are conflict avoidant, and that might create problems. But it's wonderful to have this positive approach, this lightness, and also the flexibility in adapting and recreating, reinventing the relationship as they go.
So I would say, looking at self-preservation sevens in relationship, I think this is the subtype that's probably of all 27, the most self-focused, self-referencing, a lot of attention on sort of what they want to do, how they want to spend their time, how they want to experience pleasure, how they want to control what they experience. Although I agree with Uranio that sevens generally, and I think like fives and sixes, once they commit, they really do commit. I think it can be the hardest for self-preservation sevens to commit. Maybe, I'm not sure about that. But there can be sort of a length of time before they commit, where they're really exploring other options or maybe feeling fearful, whether they're aware of it or not, of choosing one option and losing the other options. I think when they do commit, I see that self-preservation sevens are very capable of long-term commitment. And I think that sometimes they get negatively stereotyped as not being, as being excessively non-committal. And I think their non-commitment is a little bit more in the superficial realm, like making a plan, but then having backup plans, not necessarily committing or not to a relationship. I do think sometimes it takes them a while to get there, but once they do, many people I know have very long-term, very solid commitments. So I think that's important to know about all sevens, and including the self-preservation seven. I do think, but there can be a little bit more focus on what I want to do and not as much room for what you want to do. I have noticed that there can be sort of a trying to talk you into wanting to do what I want to do because it's so great, a kind of charm and charming people into going their way or doing things their way or contributing to their plan instead of them giving way to someone else. And I think sometimes that can be an issue in relationship, but it can also be nice because there's a way the self-preservation seven can take the lead in making plans and directing the course of what you do together in relationship.
Yeah, I think for all head types, five, sixes, and sevens, there tends to be a longer time in the beginning in which they hesitate, they need to make the decision with more thoughts and some procrastination when it comes to committing to the relationship for longer. And also for sevens, I want to say, at least from me, one last thing, and that is the risk of being self-referencing when it comes to relationships. Less for social sevens, but in general, sevens are self-referencing. So it's about what I want, what I expect, and how I want to live life. And not as easy to look at what the other person wants. As I said, less so for social sevens, but even social sevens at times, they want to entertain the other, to make the other happy from their own concept of what the other might want and what they should do. Not necessarily in a true rapport and active listening to the other person. So this is something to watch out in relationships to make it more balanced.
Right. And certainly self-preservation sevens can have the hardest time empathizing with the other person because they're a little more heady as well as being a little more self-referencing. Now the social seven, I would say this is the counter type. It's a seven that kind of doesn't look like a seven. It's a seven that can look more two-ish because they tend to want to make other people happy. But of course, making other people happy is an indirect or sometimes unconscious way of making sure they stay happy by making sure everyone around them is happy. So they can be somewhat people who put a lot of energy into trying to make other people happy. But I do think the point Uranio made is really important to remember. Often their sense of what would make others happy or what would take away their pain is based on their own need to be happy or to avoid pain. And to the extent that they're not aware of that, sometimes their efforts can be misdirected. And not really based on what the other person really wants and needs, and not including what they want and need, which is also important. It's important to have a balance in any relationship of both people's needs and desires being included. And sometimes the social sevens can sort of not pay attention to theirs in the favor of making other people happy and wanting to be seen as good for someone who is of service to others, takes away others' pain, And they can get frustrated if that's not working, you know, either if they're not seen for being good and valued for their sacrifice, or if they are too much giving way to the other and not finding room for what they want, and then they can feel resentful. And in similar way that twos can, but of course, very differently from twos, sevens are very aware often of what they need and want. They just tend to try to put it to the side in favor of making people happy and being a person who's a good person because they strive to make others happy.
Now, if you are in a relationship with a seven, one advice is, instead of going straight to the point in talking about issues and problems, make sure that you talk about positive things first and last. Because sevens won't hear you. It will be very difficult for them to just talk about issues. But it's easier for them if you keep a little bit of a positive tone yourself. And if there is this preamble and then the end, talking about the, you know, the good things.
So talking maybe about sexual seven. Sexual seven is the seven who sees life through rose-colored glasses the most, who really lives in their imagination of how great things could be, right? So sees things super positive. So what Arani just said might be really important for if you're in relationship with a sexual seven, because it can be even harder for them to hear the sort of practical brass tacks, the nuts and bolts of everyday practical life, of things that need to be seen or done that they can experience as negative, or bringing them down to reality in a way that they resist, because it can feel hard or painful just to sort of be with what's really happening, is instead of living more from the way they would like things to be or dream things could be. So it will be important if you're in relationship with a sexual seven to recognize that they may have a low tolerance for reality or for some of the hard truths that you may need them to hear. And so on, again, as with all people, having compassion on the one hand, but also understanding and trying to name what's happening as a way of meeting in the middle of the way, as a way of helping them to see how they may be needing things to be better than they actually are, in a way that actually makes it harder for things to actually be really good. You know, that's the paradox, the irony of sevens is sometimes in seeking to avoid pain and discomfort in relationships, they actually create more of it, right? So not that hesitance to have the difficult relationship talk can be something that actually prolongs a difficult dynamic in the relationship, right? Because often when you can bring a difficult relationship dynamic to consciousness in the relationship, when you can talk about it with awareness, that difficult dynamic gets better, right? But if you don't talk about it and it stays under the surface, often it can either get worse and worse, or it can just kind of stay bad. And then the seven may need to continue to escape from the reality of what's happening in the relationship. So if you're a sexual seven, it's important to know how you can tend to see life through rose-colored glasses, how you can tend to have a real resistance to seeing and talking about the difficult things. But know that if you do, they can go away, right? The more we address what's not working or what's hard, the more things can get better faster. And so just like Uranio said, that if you're in a relationship with seven, it's really important to be positive so that the seven learns that you're not going to keep them in a place of discomfort or pain for a long period of time, because they have this unconscious belief that if they let in that difficulty, it will last forever. It can be important to reassure the seven that if we talk about this, I see things getting much better and us being able to get to a place where we don't have to talk about this anymore and we don't have to be in a painful dynamic. We can actually address it and then release ourselves from it and be much better. And yet, to the extent that we avoid talking about things, things can kind of stay in a suboptimal place in when they could be much better. If we address things with consciousness, with courage, it won't last forever, but it will be something that we pass through on the way to something, a much stronger relationship.
Right.
Anything else you want to say about sevens at all?
I think we covered the most important things in my view, unless you have anything else to add.
No, I think that's good. I'll
mention for our listeners that we do have in our website some options of pre-recorded courses that are self-guided. And some of them have to do with relationships, like the Enneagram Love Languages. But also courses like the Instinct and Subtypes, or the panels of the 27 subtypes, or even specific courses like Parenting and Family Dynamics. This might all be of interest if you are interested in going for more in the theme of relationships and the Enneagram.
Yeah, and I know we did a Conflict and Intimacy online course this past year. And we've gotten some good reviews, good feedback about that. So I'm hoping that we might try to do that again sometime. So stay tuned in case that comes back. So thank you for listening. Join us again next time for the Enneagram 2.0 podcast, where we talk about all things Enneagram.